Well, greetings, everybody. It's a real delight for me to be with you here today. My name's Simon Gilbo, and for those of you who don't know me, I've spent 20-odd years in Central Africa. That's been the context of my work, founder of a group called Great Lakes Outreach, doing stunning transformational work in the beautiful but broken nation of Burundi. And so now I'm based in Bath with my wife and three children, and I think that'll do for now, but I'll refer a bit to our lives as we go through and look at this fantastic passage. It's a key passage in Matthew, Mark, and Luke in terms of us understanding. If those three gospel accounts are trying to give a clear picture of who Jesus is, you've got him showing his authority over the weather in terms of calming the storm, casting out demons, healing the sick, and basically showing that he has authority over all things, that he is God. But people don't necessarily know that he is God, do they? And so he's walking along with his mates, having shown them already his great power. And verse 27, let's read it. Jesus and his disciples went on to the villages around Caesarea Philippi. And on the way, he asked them, now, who do the people say I am? And so he's just sort of sounding them out, if you like. And he gets an answer which wouldn't be that different from nowadays. Verse 28, some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others that one of the prophets. Now, Elijah was one of the prophets. John the Baptist, either some people say he's a nut job or he was a very inspirational ascetic. But, you know, if people today, you ask them, who do you say Jesus is? They might say, well, the Muslims would say he's a prophet. And lots of people would say he's a good man, a good moral teacher. And so you get that range of answers. In any case, Jesus then turns it on them, doesn't he? Verse 29 says, this is the important thing. What about you? Who do you say I am? And Peter answered, you are the Messiah. And I was just thinking today in preparation for this, I was thinking about three defining questions that have set the course of my life. I'll do them in reverse order. One was 18 years ago tomorrow, which is when we'll be celebrating our wedding anniversary, which was Lizzie Korf, will you marry me? That was very foundational. It set the course, in a sense, of a huge part of my life. The question before that was how I ended up in Burundi. And basically, a guy tracked me down and said, I believe God sent me to you, and he wants you to go to Burundi. And this is trying to condense the story very briefly. And I had been praying, Lord, I'll do anything, I'll go anywhere. So I said to him, all right, I'll think about it. I went back to my job. I was in front of the computer, said, God, right now in front of the computer, if you want me to go to Burundi, give me a radical sign, because it means leaving family, friends, security, career, everything, going to a place where I might get killed. And people have tried to kill me in the meantime. So give me a radical sign right now in front of the computer, Lord, if you want me to go. And I received a phone call, picked up, and the voice on the other end, out of the blue, said, do you know anyone who wants to go to Burundi? Now, I just said, Lord, give me a radical sign about Burundi if you want me to go. So that was a key question. The marriage question, will you marry me, Lizzie, was a key question. Then that question, do you know anyone who wants to go to Burundi? Will you go to Burundi? That was a key question. And all those questions hung and swung, if you like, and for all of us, as we choose to live our lives, will swing on our answer to the question that Jesus asked. Who do you say I am? Who do you say I am? That is the most important question you will have to answer in this lifetime, and it will define the answers to the others, because I wouldn't have married Jesus, I wouldn't have married Lizzie if she wasn't on the same page in terms of including our wedding proposal was, are you ready to be a young widow? Now, what a nonsense proposal, unless this message, our answer to the question, who do you say Jesus is worth living and dying for? And that's actually what he calls us to as he goes on through the passage, doesn't he? And my call to Burundi, nonsense to go to a war zone, what was the most dangerous country in the world at the time in 1998 when I received that call, unless Jesus lived and died and paid the price in my place, and then he is worth living and dying for. So do you see how critical this question is? And actually, in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, he's shown us the power, he's shown his authority, he's laid down his credentials, and his character and conduct are consistent with his claims that he is the Son of God. And as we hear that declaration from Peter in verse 29, you are the Messiah, or you are the Son of the living God in the other translation, the other gospel. We are lent as the listener or as the reader of these gospel tracts. They're essentially gospel presentations. They're all building up to this point. Okay, this is what Jesus done. And now Peter says, you are the Christ. You're the Son of the living God. You're the Messiah. We are meant to understand from here on in that that is God's identity. So that it is the linchpin of each of those three gospels. It's a critical passage. And from here on in, we are meant to carry on in our understanding that this is the promised Messiah. And so that's why it's such a juicy passage. And what's interesting is that verse 30, straightway Jesus warned them not to tell anyone. He says, keep shtum. No, it's all about timing and expectation. Now, I've lived in a coup. I've lived in an attempt at regime change. I've lived under oppressive regimes, and I've experienced the crowd and the sense of expectation of change, burning barricades, gunfire, people out on the street demonstrating, and there's a great sense of excitement, anticipation. In a sense, that was what the Jews were living. They'd lived under years, decades of oppression from the Roman regime, and they wanted change. And Jesus is saying, yes, I am the Messiah, but you've got a slightly twisted view of what my messiahship, if you like, looks like. And that's why he actually, verse 31, he then began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, that he must be killed and after 3 days rise again. So basically what he's doing is trying to change their expectations. They wanted this kick-butt Messiah that was going to boot out the Romans once for all and bring liberation. That was their expectation. He's saying, no, my rule, the kingdom of God, is a different kind of kingdom. It's a much bigger, more all-encompassing kingdom. It's not just politics. And so you've got Peter, who then takes Jesus aside and rebukes him. And Jesus, very strong, says, get behind me, Satan. Because you don't have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns. And Peter, he's well-intentioned, he's got a big mouth, hasn't he? And Jesus just puts him in his place, not callously, not cruelly, but he firmly puts him in his place. And then he comes out pretty much with a manifesto of what it is to become a follower of Jesus. And this is, I suppose, what I want to concentrate on, the three things that he comes out with. So he calls the crowds, verse 34, to him, along with his disciples. He says, whoever, this is anyone, this is you today. You don't have to have it all together. Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. Garibaldi, who is the great Italian leader who led Italy to unification and freedom many years ago, this was his manifesto. He said to his potential recruits, I promise you long marches, shortened rations, bloody battles, imprisonment, torture, and death, but let him who loves home and fatherland follow me. That's not a soft sell, is it? That is not a soft sell. That's not what we get in election season about people promising whatever they can to woo the electorate. No, Garibaldi was a realist. And Jesus is saying, be realists. If you're going to come after me, this is the deal. You might have to deny yourself, take up your cross daily, and follow me. So briefly, let's look at those. Deny yourself. Well, that is so antithetical to the spirit of our age where, you know, that worship song, it's all about you, Jesus, and all this is for you, for your glory and your fame. I remember one guy singing, complete abandon. He just got the pronouns wrong, personal pronouns. It's all about me, Jesus, and all this is for me, for my glory and my fame. You know, maybe he's actually the only honest guy in the house, because we are in a very sort of self-absorbed age, isn't it? Where it is all about me. It's what I can get out of my life. Oswald Chambers said that, came up with this question. It's very powerful. Is God going to help himself to me, or am I so taken up of my conception of what I want to make of my life? Do you hear all those I's and my's? Is God going to help himself to you, or are you so taken up with your agenda of what you want to make of your life? There was a girl in London at one of the universities, and she was doing a course, and she had to do this one module to fulfill the course requirements. It was on first aid, and it was totally tedious, and she every week showed up late, yawned, showed complete disregard, disrespect for the other students and for the lecturer. Week after week, it was like that. But then one day she showed up and she was turbocharged. I said, can I say, they're so encouraged by enthusiasm. The lecturer said, yeah, speak up. He said, it was amazing. I was out on the street and there was this horrific car crash and there's blood everywhere. And I didn't know what to do. And then, I remembered what I'd learned on this course, and I put my head between my legs and I didn't vomit. she had completely missed the point of that first aid course. That first aid course was to save lives. And she had just thought about herself in terms of what to do, not to throw up. I mean, it's a silly story, isn't it? But I think sometimes in our Christianity, we've just missed the point of what it's all about. Jesus doesn't come just to bless me and make me happy and take away my problems. You know, that's a very twisted Western gospel. My brother and sister in Burundi, they are not suckers for that line because they know it's going to be hard to stand for truth, to resist corruption, to not take the easy shortcut that might yield fruit, which I really need right now in terms of paying the bills, to call things out that are wrong, to go the extra mile when I'm already absolutely wiped out and shattered. I've got nothing seemingly to give. And yet Jesus is saying, if you're going to come after me, you must deny yourself. Then you must take up your cross, in Luke's version, so take up your cross daily. This is a daily journey of taking up our cross. And again, I think in the West, because we haven't faced overt persecution, this is hard for us to get. It was interesting, I was doing some training on evangelism about taking the gospel out in the streets. And by the way, we do that regularly and people are scared who haven't done it. And everyone who comes out, the fear goes. I mean, we might be fearful when we go out, but then you realize that what's the worst thing you're gonna get from someone? It's a no. But one of these ladies asked me, Simon, what would you do? Well, can you make any provisions, guarantees that, you know, what if someone tries to beat us up or something? And I said, maybe slightly tongue in cheek. I said, no, I can't make any provisions. No, and in fact, I love them to beat me up because then that give me a story. Because in my sedate Christian life in Bath, it's just so tame and safe and respectable. And I was out with my Burundian guys and they reach out, particularly in Muslim communities where people are very antagonistic. And they said, you know, they just said to me, Simon, when we finish reaching out in the Muslim community and we're packing up our bags and putting the material away and they're stoning us, it'd be really helpful if we had a vehicle to get away quicker. You know, they're really suffering. And lots of people around the world are really suffering. Can you imagine what it is right now to be a believer in Eritrea? Well, if you're a believer and they know you're a believer, well, you're in a shipping container right now. And you might have been there for 15 years, this oppressive regime. And that's Eritrea, or obviously North Korea is always at the top of the list in terms of being in prison camps, death camps, as followers of Jesus. In fact, if they find out that you are, then they'll take a generation either side of your family and all put you in those death camps. What's it like in Iran, again, where you're to be discovered, you'll be put in prison, you'll be raped as a lady, you'll lose your job. I mean, there's about 250 million Christians living under oppressive regimes right now that coming to Jesus, oh, come to Jesus, he'll take away your problems and make you happy. Nonsense. Jesus said in John 16, verse 23, in this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. What's it look like to take up my cross? Take up my cross daily to suffer. And I suppose a challenging question to ask myself is that if I'm not suffering in any way in my pursuit of Jesus, am I actually following him? Am I expecting him to follow me on my terms at my convenience? Well, that would be the last one, wouldn't it? Deny yourself, take up your cross daily and follow me. And yeah, I do ask myself that question. So, am I really following you, Jesus? Or am I expecting you to follow me? Am I defining the parameters of the relationship so that you don't cramp my style, so that you endorse all my life choices, so you're just there that when I need you, but otherwise, you know, you're on the back burner. And he says, no, I want you to follow me. And that was the prayer that took me to Burundi. That's the prayer I'm still praying. God, I'll do anything. I'll go anywhere. And in that case, 23 years ago, he gave me a very dramatic answer. And sometimes it's not dramatic. Sometimes it's just a daily walk of faithful obedience, but following him, not expecting him to follow me. Are you following him? The danger is that we can settle for bumper stickers and slogans. And he's saying, I'm calling you to embrace scars. What does that look like down your street, in your community? Are we getting stuck in? How are we using our time? How are we spending our money? This is a game changer. Who do you say I am? That is what Jesus is asking. Who do you say I am? And if you answer with Peter, and you got the answer right, the Messiah, then that changes everything. And he doesn't give the soft sell. And then he goes on verse 35, whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel will save it. At the risk of offending, you know, we've got to stop living afraid in this nation. What with COVID and stuff like that? I mean, COVID, it's a serious issue, but our birthright as Christians is to not live by fear. Let me just, you know, this is a daily devotion I wrote called Choose Life. And it'd be well worth getting. It's a daily, we make daily choices, don't we? You can choose fear or faith. That's a big one that I plug. And I think coming up from Burundi, where there's obvious reasons to be afraid. I mean, people did try to kill me. Got a letter saying they're going to cut out my eyes. I drove along a road once, 40 people were killed. It was, you know, I was likely to die, but I was free from fear. But it was reasonable to fear over there. And here in England, I come back to a country where we're shackled by fear and we don't need to be afraid. Your birthright's to live by faith. And so many of us, we're trying to save our life. And Jesus says, whoever wants to save their life will lose it. But whoever loses their life for me and the gospel, that's the highest call, will save it. So please stop living afraid. What good is it for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit his soul? Please don't seek the world and yet forfeit your soul. So many people are chasing after stuff that will not last, that they're not going to take with them. C.S. Lewis says, anything which isn't eternal is eternally out of date. A friend of mine, he'd listened to a costly sermon on the discipleship of the cross. And he said this, he wrote to me, he said, very powerful. Our generation so badly needs to hear it. He said, I really want the opportunity to preach at such and such a gathering and dispel the myth that is so readily received that it doesn't matter what you do, so long as you're successful, have fun, and have Jesus. What a total lie of the evil one. It's making our generation inept for the gospel. Well, is it all right just to be successful, have fun, and tag on Jesus? No. His conclusion, it's making our generation totally inept for the gospel. It's a lie of the evil one. So we need to be sharp. We need to be unashamed. That's Jesus' last verse here. If anyone is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful nation, the Son of Man will be ashamed of them when he comes in his Father's glory with the holy angels. And he is coming. We don't know when, but he is coming. And we need to live ready and we need to get people ready. And we don't want to be ashamed. Let's be with Paul in Romans, writes, I am not ashamed of the gospel. It's the power of God for salvation of everyone who believes. That's the offer. It's to everyone. And Jesus says, whoever will come after me. So that's for you today, as you're listening. He says, I want your life. Don't give me a loose change. Don't give me a shrapnel. Don't give me the leftovers. I want you. Don't bargain with me. Come. Let's do this. Let's do this as family. Let's do this as community. Let's do this as church, as the body of Christ, incarnating kingdom values. Don't be ashamed. You know, today is the last day. As you're listening to me, we've just, over the last 2 weeks, sent out 610 evangelists in Burundi. They've gone out there and they've counted the costs, denying themselves, taking up their cross and following him. And some have been beaten up. And some, because we've done this the last 15 years, we've seen 170,000 people over those 15 years come to Jesus. I mean, the average we've done is 700 people times 14 days times 15 years times 8 hours a day. That's a lot of outreach, isn't it? 170,000 people come to Jesus. They've cast out demons. They've healed the sick. Exactly what we've read about in Mark chapter 7, 8, and 9, around this passage. Jesus modeled it to them. And he said, you will receive power. You'll be my witnesses. You will go. You've got the same authority. Go and be my hands and feet and mouthpiece in my name. Do those things. And that's what they've been doing in Burundi. And they are unashamed. And I'm calling on you and on myself to not be ashamed of the gospel. It is the power of God for salvation. And by the way, I'd love you to pray and to pray for lasting fruit from that initiative. My email is simon@greatlakesoutreach.org. simon@greatlakesoutreach.org. Just get in touch and I can get you regular news and updates on these incredible miracles, which will build your own faith where you are. And think, why am I ashamed? Why am I ashamed? When we go out on the streets, the worst reaction we ever had is, have you got a second? No. That's the worst thing. They're not chucking stones at us. We don't need to be ashamed. We don't need to be afraid. I'll close with this quote by this Zimbabwean young man who was martyred for his faith. He said, "I'm part of the fellowship of the unashamed. I have the Holy Spirit's power. The die has been cast. I have stepped over the line. The decision has been made. I'm a disciple of his. And I won't look back, let up, slow down, back away, or stand still. I will not flinch in the face of sacrifice, hesitate in the presence of the enemy, pander at the pool of popularity, or meander in the maze of mediocrity. I am a disciple of Jesus, and I must go till he comes, and give till I drop, and preach till all know, and work till he stops me. And when he comes for his own, he'll have no trouble recognizing me. My banner will be clear." Is your banner clear? I hope today I've challenged you and inspired you. I genuinely hope I've inspired you because we've got a great big God. By the way, I've got a podcast called Inspired with a whole range of great guests. So if you want to take a look at that, do. Be inspired and take this inspiration as a charge to get out there. Who do you say I am? Wrestle with that question. If you answered Peter, "You are the Messiah," then it is a game changer. And then deny yourself, take up your cross daily, and follow him. And all God's people said, Amen. Thanks, and God bless you all.